Senator, thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Good to have you with us today. I want to start off with an issue that's been in the news recently quite a bit. Data collection by the federal government for the last year really has been in the news of all types, not just of U.S. citizens, but of course of some of our leaders across the world, some of our allies, and this has been quite controversial. Congress, I know, is working on legislation called the USA Freedom Act to protect Americans' privacy. Tell me about this and your thoughts on this issue.
I'd be happy to. I am a co-sponsor of the USA Freedom Act, and basically what it would do for our counterterrorism efforts and our the work that gets done at the NSA, which is very important, is it would focus it back on the bad guys and end the sort of dragnet collection of data belonging to innocent Americans. I don't think we should be holding the phone records of millions of innocent Americans. And I think if we focus back on the people that we suspect of terrorism, that will be even more effective in our counterterrorism mission. But at the same time, we need to continue to protect our privacy rights and the great liberties and freedom that our Constitution has given us in this country.
As I mentioned, this is also an issue in terms of international relations, and there's been some great concern as to whether or not some real damage has been done due to information about spying that has been done on some of leaders around the world that are very strong allies of the United States. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it's an interesting situation. The reality from my perspective, and I sit on the Intelligence Committee and I get to see a lot of this information, is that even our allies conduct surveillance on us, and we have conducted surveillance on our allies. I think the thing that concerns me the most, and the place where I'm going to be putting the bulk of my efforts around this, are around making sure that innocent Americans don't get caught up in this, and that we have laws that protect law-abiding Americans from the kind of overreach that we've seen, and that we get it right the way our founders did with respect to the Fourth Amendment.
You mentioned you're on the Intelligence Committee, and there have been reports that the committee has not been terribly pleased as a whole, and in particular the chair, Senator Feinstein, that there wasn't a feeling that there was all of this information being shared with the committee, and some were taken by surprise about some of the leaders that had faced this kind of invasion of their private phone calls, including Angela Merkel in Germany.
Well, I think the way to describe it that would be appropriate, not sharing anything that I obviously can't share, would be to say that we've, as a committee, said to the NSA on numerous occasions, given what happened recently with Edward Snowden, what else is coming? And, you know, we continue to be surprised by news reports that we weren't necessarily expecting. And I think there needs to be just a healthier level of transparency and communication between the NSA, the administration, and the Oversight Committee.
Okay. I want to move on to another issue because we only have a short amount of time here together today. The temporary extension of the debt limit and the reopening of the government was made possible with hopes that there'd be a so-called grand bargain, perhaps, here in the next few months that might include compromises on programs like Social Security and Medicare. Where do you stand on shoring up those programs, and should these be even part of discussions for a grand bargain? As you know, there's a lot of controversy about this.
I actually am of the opinion that we're not in a place where right now where we can get to a grand bargain. And any grand bargain would have to pair any reforms to entitlement programs with new revenues, or it would just be a non-starter. I think right now you saw how the lack of trust that exists across the aisle right now, and we need to rebuild some of that. And I think in the short term, interim budget talks really need to focus on what's achievable and on rebuilding that trust so that we can continue this progress and move towards bigger things. Now, if you do start looking at the framework of what a sort of quote-unquote grand bargain might look like, I'm of the opinion that things like chain CPI don't make a lot of sense. I'm much more open to ideas like means testing Social Security or means testing Medicare than impacting lower income people on those programs.
Okay, and just for background for folks that are listening, chained CPI, this is relating to the formula used for cost of living increases for Social Security. And of course, President Obama took some heat for apparently he had a reported willingness to look at that as one of the bargaining chips. You say this really shouldn't be a bargaining chip.
In fact, it was, I believe, in the president's budget this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are smart ways to get at some of the solvency issues.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting, and certainly something that we'll continue to be talking about as we look to some kind of an agreement beyond January, February, with both the issues of the government shutdown looming again and a debt limit increase looming again. Anything further that you want to say on that, in terms of what you think might be most likely, since you don't believe a so-called grand bargain is possible?
I think we'll see what I hope to see is some level of replacement of the sequester cuts, but nothing on the scale of a grand bargain, simply because I just don't think that the trust exists yet. But I think this is an opportunity for us to move in that direction and really create a functional Congress again. And I think the American people made it very clear that they did not appreciate people who were willing to shut down the government over, you know, whatever ideological issues you may have, but you don't have the votes to actually accomplish. They want us to govern, and they expect us to pay our bills, and they expect us to make the tough budgeting decisions, and this can be a very positive step in that direction.
Okay. One final question, and this is one of the biggest issues for our region, and one that has been overshadowed because of the focus on the government shutdown and the budget, and that is immigration reform. Where do you believe this stands right now? What do you think? Do you think we're going to get an agreement?
I certainly hope so. The Senate certainly showed that both compromise and bipartisanship are possible within the context of immigration reform. We passed legislation that ensures border security, but also gives a tough but fair path to earn citizenship and treats DREAM Act students appropriately. And I would call on the House of Representatives to finish that job to make sure that we don't lose this opportunity to fix our broken immigration system. And there is serious support for this issue on both sides of the aisle, and it's going to be a matter of whether or not the Republican leadership, the majority leadership in the House of Representatives, is willing to stand up to that small Tea Party faction and say, we're going to govern, we know it's broken, let's work together to fix it.
And one final point on that, because you mentioned specifically the House of Representatives, where, as you know, there is that group of Republicans predominantly who say we will not approve any immigration reform that includes a path to citizenship. Do you think that the not only any actions by the Republican leadership, but do you think that the public pressure combined with a lot of business pressure, major businesses and business leaders saying that there should be an agreement on immigration reform, do you think that might have the impact?
I certainly hope so, and I think we're seeing the beginnings of that. The voices coming to bear on this issue from the business community, as you said, all across this country, faith communities, you know, people from all walks of life really saying to the House of Representatives, now is the time to get this done. And I would say that if you put the Senate bill for immigration reform that passed the Senate with bipartisan support, if you put it on the House of Representatives floor today, it would pass. So it's a matter of making sure that those voices focus on House leadership who have the ability to do that.
Senator Martin Heinrich joining us today on KRWG. Senator, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for being here.
I always enjoy joining your listeners.
Thank you.